welcome to episode one of Owlbear Soup. I am one of your hosts. I'm Justin.
And I'm your other host, Rich.
Yeah. So, you know, this is a new platform for us. We've just joined the Saving Throw team, and we're very excited to be here. And thank you so much for everyone who's come to hang out with us with our first show. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I hope you are ready for we've got some news coming up. We got a review of the World of Eam. We've also got, of course, our two fantastic guests later today. We have Aki and we have Teos for some fun segments. And so so stick around. We got lots of good stuff coming up.
Yeah. So but yeah, let's kick it off a little bit. So this show is a new show to Saving Throw Network. We've done this show before. In different versions, and then we've both podcast before separately together. Mm-hmm. We used to both individually be hosts of the Going Last podcast. That was quite a while ago, but and neither of us were hosts at the same time, so you know that's fun too. So here we are, we're excited to talk to everyone about tabletop games, about board games. About miniatures. We're going to talk about minis today. I love minis.
Yeah,
and,
right?
You know, just basically chat with all the cool stuff that we like. And hopefully you all like it too. And in addition, one of our things that we like to do, because we're both RPG nerds, at the last portion of the, I know, right? On this network, the last portion of the show is going to be dedicated to kind of like outlining and thinking about a new adventure or encounter or something that you can kind of take to your table and play with at home.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I think that's a quick introduction to the show. Hey, Rich, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself real quick, since this is our first time chatting with this new and amazing audience.
Absolutely. I'm Rich. You can find me online at R. Molina in different places. I'm a longtime teacher, game designer, and yeah, I think between the two of us, at the very least, we've been doing this for like 10 years, it feels like, talking about games and Kickstarter is one of my particular fascinations. So we'll see some of that coming up.
Yeah. You know, like I said, my background is that, you know, I've done a lot of podcasting. I've, you know, got the chance to talk to a lot of great game designers in the past, and I'm hoping to bring some of that experience and some of those connections to this network. Me personally, I've been playing D&D for, well over half my life, probably 2/3 of my life at this point. You know, other role-playing games. In addition, I'm a huge pirate nerd. And also I DJ here on Twitch too. So, you know, that's my passions. That's the things that I do.
Perfect. Perfect. Whew. Well, yeah, well, we're excited to meet all of you, and we'll be checking the chat, and hopefully, you know, especially later on when you've got suggestions for our adventures, we'll get to meet you a little bit more.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that brings us to our first segment, in which, I will have to look at our notes because I forgot which order we decided to put things in, but I think we're going to talk about our gaming. We are playing, we play some games together, not just video games, but role-playing games. Mm-hmm. And specifically we are in this fantastic, adventure. We are playing Pathfinder 2. This is my first dive into Pathfinder 2. It's been interesting.
Yeah. It's a wild game, right? We both played Pathfinder 1 quite a bit, you know, back in the D&D 3.5 days and after. And Pathfinder 2 is kind of the new uptake, which I just missed while D&D 5th Ed was going on. Just switched over completely, and we wanted to try it out. So we are playing right now War for the Crown, which is like all about Taldor. A huge uproar now I got to go back in time. The emperor is about to create an heir. The emperor is killed, and this other person stands up and says, "I'm the heir now." So it's like political upheaval, which is pretty fun. We started with like social encounters where we are using our skills to kind of sway the imperial senate, which I don't think is the right term, but I like it.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I'm playing a mage, an elven mage. I tend to like to play mages whenever I first dive into a new RPG system, specifically because I think they're complicated. They tend to be a little bit more complicated, and I enjoy kind of stretching my brain a little bit around a new system whenever I get into it. And, you know, So this is a published adventure from Paizo.
Yep.
And
the last one they did for Pathfinder 1, because it sets the new tone for Pathfinder 2.
And it's a conversion. So we are into the second book. We have a manor near Lothied. In our most recent adventure, we had a little bit of a run-in with some of the local authorities and the local vigilante, the Night Swan. So
right.
we're trying to figure out what's going on there.
Yeah, we are all undercover at this point, right? We're in this manor house pretending to be the nobility who's supposed to run it and run this town, but we're not. We're supporters of the new empress and trying to convince everyone around to join the cause, including the count of this region, who is kind of a jerk. So we're about to start a big protest. We're turning into vigilantes to go and reduce their power. It's wild because that's not a game I get to play very often. So I'm really digging in with my champion of art and beauty, Shaylin, like a little paladin of art. I mean, it's fantastic. Yeah. And then I got stabbed a whole lot recently by the Night Swan, this vigilante who thinks I'm a real noble, but I am actually a very real noble. So it's fine.
Yeah. Also, the DM Chris, he's doing a fantastic job converting this and bringing some really interesting ways to roleplay that I'd never thought of before. Into the game. Specifically, he often has the other players playing NPCs. And I know this is something a lot of people do, but I've never experienced it. And I've had a ton of fun with that whole experience.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. This last time I got a note on Discord real quick, which was like, hey, I'd like you to run this character, the Archbanker of Abadar. So this beacon of the law here in town, Abadar is the god of civilization in Galarian. And it was great. I got to, I wanted to harness, I started calling the PCs citizen, cause I wanted to harness that moment in the new Star Trek movie, where Kirk is driving the car off the edge and then the officer stops and goes citizen. And you're like, oh gosh, that person's claiming authority right now. And I was trying to get a little bit of that in there, and it was fun. I like playing other characters in other PC stories. It's very fun.
Yeah. And one of the characters in our group, Shams, played by our friend Fletcher, he's part of this neat underground sword fighting membership thing. And one of the fun things is we each got to also make two of these people of this secret sword fighting society.
Right.
And at some point, we are going to challenge him with our secondary characters. And I think that's going to be a ton of fun.
Right. I'm not going to talk about my characters yet, just in case Fletcher is watching. But one of them is going to be my old venture captain from Pathfinder Society. I'm very excited about bringing it to life in this new version. Overall, Pathfinder 2 has been fun. So
Yeah. No, I've really enjoyed Pathfinder 2. I think it's a fun system. Also, this is one of those campaigns where it's I'm already dreading the end of it. The person who's playing Professor Caster, he's a failed alchemist, and he's so miserable in the best and most charming way. Mm-hmm. And then we have Rafe the Hunter, and also very uppity elf, and he plays it so well and so charmingly that it's fantastic. It's really a great group. And I look forward to us talking to you all more about it as we continue through this.
Mm-hmm. It's a good game. We got real lucky finding it on Roll20. We got good people. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it was definitely solid. I never thought I would enjoy playing a Pathfinder game as much as I am. I'm very much a D&D nerd.
Yeah, for me, this is a good break, right? Because my regular job is running sessions of D&D for kids. So this week I ran 7 battles in the great arena for our young heroes. And it was a ton of fun. It was good because it got pretty dark in a couple places. The kids are fighting and I had to had to. There's a big evil person making them all fight. It's just, it's kind of terrifying. But now they're getting like the glimmers of how they're going to get out of this, which is very fun. We're midway through our week long, or our, you know, 5 day long campaign. It's pretty good.
Yeah. And then, yeah, and I'm also eventually going to start running my Dungeon and Mad Mage campaign again. So I'll talk to a little bit about that. I'm hoping to start that back up this month after a month off. Okay. And yeah, so I think that covers our first segment where we talk about all our gaming stuff. Let's go ahead and do a quick dive into the news.
Fantastic. Well, first up on my end is I wanted to take a quick look at Coyote and Crow, which is a fantastic RPG that showed up on Kickstarter last month. It just finished funding, and it is the seventh RPG of all time to hit the $1 million mark on Kickstarter, which is wild. It's just so much. It's fantastic. And it's sharing that honor with things like, you know, Matt Colville's games, Strongholds, Kingdoms Warfare, and more. The One Ring role-playing game, the second edition, that was last month. And then The Seeker's Guide to Twisted Taverns. We talked about those both last month. And that one for me was like, whoa. It's very cool. But Coyote and Crow specifically is an RPG about an uncolonized America created by a team of natives with native design in mind. So it's meant to be this science fiction fantasy fusion. It looks just incredible, and everything I've read about it on the campaign sounds great. So I was so excited seeing this project like on day one get started, start building momentum, and it just never ever stopped.
Did you back that one?
I did. Oh, absolutely. Oh.
Well, let me know when you're ready to play it.
I will.
It looks super exciting to me.
They one of my favorite updates they did was an ode to the humble D12, the most maligned and underused of dice. and it is the core of the Coyote and Crow system. So that was very cool to see as well. It's beautiful. The art looks fantastic, and the team that's building it is really passionate about the entire thing. I just couldn't be more excited about an upcoming RPG. I'm glad they hit the million mark.
they're absolutely right. The D12 is very neglected. I was thinking about that. I was like, how many times do I have the chance to use a D12 in any of my home games?
Right.
Or at the table at all? No, I love that. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Excuse me. Go for it.
Oh, I was just going to move on to the next segment, news item. But if you're still talking about Coyote Crow, do it.
I could gush, but no. Check it out on Kickstarter. You can read all their updates and see all the news. I am certain you're going to be able to get that game in the future as well if you miss the Kickstarter. It's too big to just stop at this point.
Right. So one of my favorite animated films is Zootopia. I really love that movie. That movie was it was a ton of fun. I love the movie. I love the musical numbers. I love the story. I love everything going on about it. And Silver Games has released a new RPG supplement that takes place in, you know, a more modern futuristic setting where you get to play out your favorite anthropomorphic animal characters.
Nice.
This is called Tales of the City. So the idea of this is you kind of create a pulpy like action flick mixed with a cartoon, and you know, and it's based all on the Pathfinder system. So it's totally compatible with other 5e. It's compatible with 5e first edition and second edition Pathfinder games. So a lot of different variations for it, and there's new feats, new gear, new spells, a bunch of stuff. It looks like a fun way to play that fox character that you've always wanted to play, or you know, a giraffe. It reminds me a little bit of the idea of like the Big Eyes Small Mouth. Not that I ever played that game, but you know the idea behind it, where it's like you get to live out these you know your anime fantasies or you're trying to be an animal, you know. Yeah, exactly. Right. Like in chat, you know, they've always wanted to play a giraffe, and I kind of want to play an aardvark, but also a giraffe.
See, for me, it was the moment Hero Forge added the ability to play a fox folk and have like nine tails if you wanted to, if you want your nine-tailed fox.
Oh,
there
yeah.
You are.
You could be
which
your kitsune.
Suddenly meant you could be a nine-tailed elephant. You could be a nine-tailed anything.
Oh, no.
It was pretty great. So more.
More. So what animal, you would be a fox folk if you were to pick an animal?
Squirrel? Fox.
Squirrel? Squirrel. I forgot about squirrels.
I mean,
squirrels are great. I love squirrels.
Actually, one of my favorite characters I've played in recent history is an otter folk.
Oh, that's great.
DM's Guild is a lot of really fun things for 5th Ed, and otter folk was one from a couple years back. Good designer. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. But yeah, definitely, if you like this kind of style of play, check out Tales of the City from Silver Games. Redwall, that's a good call. Like I love the idea of Redwall. I love Mouse Guard. I love the Mouse Guard RPG art book or artwork. I haven't gotten to play chance to play that one either. So if anyone wants to run some Mouse Guard, Rich, I would totally be down to play.
Just because I have all the books, Justin. No.
I know you.
Oh my gosh. Well, next up for me is Modiphius is putting out the Fallout RPG. There's a rundown, kind of like a first look that I found on EN World that was pretty fantastic. They're getting review copies of the PDF. I want it. and one of the things I'm excited about is I've just played every Fallout. You know, it's kind of, I like the post-apocalyptic look. I'm used to playing it back in the days where it felt very turn-based rather than kind of like the, FPS version from the latest ones. So I'm excited to see what they did, what they decided to keep and use. They use Vault 111 on their artwork, so I'm guessing it's skewing more towards new. It is using a system which I find very intriguing as well, which I would like to play. It is the 2d20 system, where you are trying to roll 2d20 and get underneath your attributes to get a certain number of successes. It sounds wild. as a longtime math teacher, I just want to see how people use dice to do like fun probabilities of events succeeding or failing. So I want to know what's up there. It's a great team of designers, and it looks like you get to play some pretty interesting character types. It looks like Brotherhood of Steel is on the table. A ghoul. Cool. You could be a super mutant. You could be a Mr. Handy robot.
I totally want to be a Mr. Handy robot. That's really the one that I want to be.
I mean, Brotherhood of Steel gives me that, like, I could play like a Rifts character. Is that what's going on here? You know, sounds kind of amazing. And there's also, of course, Survivor and Vault Dweller. You have to have those.
Yeah.
I love giving these like major factions a huge importance as, in terms of character classes.
I once played when I was back in the olden days when AOL chat rooms were the place to play role playing games. I was in a Fallout game, and I think it was based off a D6 system, but it was also very much the top down style of Fallout. So what would happen is like once a week, it was played over email on AOL. Once a week, we would get this new like ASCII style map that this person had made with like dashes and periods and stuff. And it was a top down view, and it was almost like playing NetHack.
Fallout NetHack on AOL. That's fantastic.
Yeah. So, hi, I've seen some stuff.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It sounds like a lot of fun. I really want to check it out just because it's a world that I enjoy and have always enjoyed. So. Hopefully we'll get a look at that soon.
We're going to talk about minis a little bit later with Teos, and I do think we are going to talk about this thing. So at nearly 15 inches tall and 30 inches wide, coming in September from WizKids, the largest official Tiamat miniature ever for only $399.
Yeah.
I like that it says slated hits store shelves in September of this year, available for pre-order. WizKids online shop. The miniature will be priced under $400. It's going to be $399.
Right. I really like that. You know, when you talk about minis, you talk about like the centimeters of the base, and this is a mini that you should really express in terms of feet, or like,
right,
I guess meters if you want to stay metric. It's huge.
It's huge. I feel like this is one that you have to present the mass of it.
Right. Yeah, this isn't so much you put it on the table. It's set on a table over there, like overlooking your game room forever.
Yeah, no. This gets its
sculpture.
Own, it gets its own chair at the table.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my gosh.
No, I'm excited about it. I don't know that I will be purchasing it, but I'm excited to see it. I think it kind of sits in the same area as those really cool things that they have to decorate your room, where it's like the mounted head of like the owlbear or the dragon or any of those things. Like, I think it fits in that same area of collectible for me, because I really don't see me like buying this huge mini to slap on a table. You know, a 200 millimeter clear round base, right? You know, like it, and just for reference, you know, here's your 20 millimeter mini.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh man.
It's amazing for me just because, you know, I've bought one of these. I bought the Eberron Skyship. It's the only kind of like super fancy mini set I ever got. And I did it basically to take some of my favorite minis and just put them on a stage. That's it. So they're up there. You know, my favorite characters flying around forever. This could be a cool one for a similar sort of thing. You know, you build your scene, you put Tiamat there. Is Tiamat actually a villain at the moment in any current D&D storylines?
I mean, Rise of Tiamat.
Well, sure. But I mean, that's a couple of years out, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it might be something that it will be referenced in like Candlekeep or something. I haven't read all of the adventures in Candlekeep.
Oh, fair enough.
Of course, there's always the rumor about a dragon supplement, you know, that type of stuff.
Exactly. Ooh, and they were testing some draconic things recently on Unearthed Arcana. Yep. Okay. All right. I'm there.
Yeah. So as far as I know, it's something like that. I'll make sure to ask Teos whenever we get over to him too, because I know he's really in touch with everything that's going on with the minis.
Right.
But yeah, it looks pretty big.
Very nice. Well, I'm going to stick around on the Kickstarter bandwagon for a second. I'm kind of excited that on Kickstarter right now is a book called Inferno, Dante's Guide to Hell for 5th Ed. This is a group of Italian designers who have just decided, they're going to take the Inferno series, the whole thing, and they're going to turn it into D&D. They're going to give you maps, DM screens. They're going to give you, you know, massive books with all the different creatures you might see. I mean, this is a very classic style of hell, and they're going to bring it to life. It's pretty wild.
That's amazing.
Getting the PDF version of Inferno, and they have other things, you know, different stretch goals, untold tales, you know, just to add breadth to the world that they've got. But the regular PDF of the system is going for, it looks like $35, which is not too bad. And overall, the campaign is at $345,000. So they're doing fine.
They're just fine.
Yeah. It's kind of cool to see, I think, this, because, you know, this is something I just remember from, I think I read all these in high school. And it was just like, ooh, creativity going all over the place. I mean, for one of the strangest books I've ever read. But I'm excited to see it in D&D, honestly.
I will say that... Someone in the chat. Even mentions it. Someone tried to gamify Dante's Inferno. That's a DJ regular. They're mentioning that someone tried to gamify Dante's Inferno, and I think I kind of remember that one, because I whenever you brought it up, I was like, did they do that before? But didn't they do poorly at that before?
I've been scared off everything since the movie, or what is the 90s movie or whatever.
Oh yeah. What's that? Oh man.
Or I don't know. I'm envisioning Pierce Brosnan at this point, but it's been so long, I don't remember.
I mean, I'm always kind of envisioning Pierce Brosnan, but that's
a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so I don't know. I mean, it's kind of cool to see it out again. I'm curious how much source material they're going to be able to build out of this and turn it from a story into, like, you know, a campaign setting. That's kind of interesting for me.
By the way, we've already been corrected.
Dante's Peak.
It was Dante's Peak.
Same. It's just inverted, right? You're just going up a mountain instead of down.
Going up instead of down. yes, please. To Aubrey Cello in the chat, can they add a pole you slide down as a stretch goal?
So, I mean,
I'm just totally into it.
A little elevator to go to any level you want. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Maybe it'll just be like Dante's Mad Mage. Mad Maze? Maze of the Mad Mage Dante. There we go.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. Anyway, that's up your alley. Check it out.
Yeah. Let's see. And you also have this Barovian born and raised.
Oh, gosh, I've got so much today. I was looking around on DM's Guild. For folks that don't know, the Dungeon Masters Guild is a website that allows basically anyone to write a book, put it up online, and get paid for it using a lot of the properties that Wizards of the Coast has out right now. So if you want to write an adventure that is set in Barovia, if you want to use art that already exists, you know, and use all the cool spells from Xanathar's Guide, the DM's Guild is the only way to do that.
Nice.
And it's pretty easy. So I've published a few things there. I review stuff on there a lot. And in honor of the next book coming out, which I believe I'm going to lose this, Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft. Is that it?
Yes, I believe okay. So. Yeah.
There's a new resurgence of Ravenloft material. There's actually a ton of it on there already. Oh, I see I'm pixelating over here.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, welcome to OBS Ninja. I'll get you. Go ahead and keep talking about it.
As long as you can still hear me. I'm pretty excited about this. This book is called Barovian Born and Raised. And the whole deal is that Ravenloft is this setting where it's set in the mists, right? And generally, your characters are not from the mists. You are from outside. You get walked through a portal, and you are locked into the demi-plane of dread. And Strahd tries to ruin your life, and you have to stop Strahd. And it kind of presents the people of Barovia as very hollow. Most, like, a lot of them are soulless, specifically, and they're kind of controlled. It's almost like you've walked into a story. And it's like the Hex. There you go. If you've watched WandaVision, it's the Hex, right?
Oh.
Some of those people just aren't doing nothing unless they're being specifically directed. There's quite a few free folk who do have souls and are acting, who have walked into the mists and gotten stuck here, right? But this is a reimagining of the entire setting, saying, what if we just said the people who live here don't like it and want to fix it? Which, for me, fixes so much of Ravenloft, right? It's the idea that you've come to this realm, you look around and you're like, oh, all these people, they live in squalor, they're so sad, I will save them all. You know, let's get rid of that. Let's just let the people rise up and battle for themselves. Yeah. And this book is all about that. Gives you ways to pick any of the you know, the peoples that already live in Ravenloft, or reasons why, you know, your Goliath might be here. And give you lots and lots of background material to go with. So you can be from this town or that town or that town and have these professions or whatever else. And then notes for how to change the story so that that makes sense. For example, it says, hey, what about we pretend most people actually have souls and are free-willed and are fine? This is a place people live, not a story land for you to encounter. And for me, that's a really cool idea. I think, you know, Ravenloft is neat for a, you know, horror-themed D&D setting, but I never really liked that, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street. Like, we travel here, and now we encounter. Like, some people just live here. Let's make the story about that.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. Also, I just want to point out, it looks like I'm going to butcher this because I butcher screen names, but SciMath has subscribed for 42 months. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Owlbear equals best bear. We agree.
Agreed. Oh, man. 42 months. That's great. That's awesome. Thank you so much for your support. Cool.
Yeah. Wow. Let's see.
I think you got one more thing on your list.
I can't stop. We were talking about Kickstarter before the show, and that totally brought up a very incredible kind of role-playing game that showed up on Kickstarter, which is The Darkest House by Monte Cook Games. I love Monte Cook Games and the stuff they make. The Cypher system is incredible. And But this is not something for the Cypher system specifically. It is a haunted mansion world, the darkest house. I mean, I don't even know how to describe it, and I've played some of it. It's a mysterious house with all sorts of rooms and features and tricks, and you have to move kind of through it and investigate this. And what they're designing specifically is something that can be used for any system. It's the house. It's a program. It's a computer program. And you, as the DM, can basically open it up and click on the rooms to move to the next place. It'll give you all the information that you see in there normally. If you want to investigate the eerie voices, the DM can easily like click on that and know what that's for, or give you keys that lead you farther into the house. It's incredible. It's like, it's a campaign set. It's an encounter setting. I don't even know how we'd describe it, how broad it's going to be, because the Kickstarter changed that. Like, the more funding they got, the bigger the house gets.
Yeah,
what a cool idea.
It is. It's a really cool idea that I did not know about until today. So I missed the Kickstarter. However, I'm sure I will be able to find it elsewhere.
Right. And this is finishing up. They're delivering in May, right? There's a demo on here that you can download and play around with it and see if it's for you. I imagine that you'll be able to pick this up now that the campaign is over as well, because Monty Cook Games likes to put their cool stuff out there. And this got brought up as well as Invisible Sun. There it is, which for a lot of people felt like a luxury, this wonderful book with all of these cool facets and ideas. And this feels very similar. Like, this is different than your regular D&D product or whatever. If horror is your thing, and you have to go play this demo and just see what it's like. Because its theme, its setting, the whole way it's showing to you presents this horror experience in a really cool way.
That's awesome. I look forward to kind of digging into that. I realized there was both a Mac and a PC version to download to kind of check out the app or whatever. But I downloaded the wrong version while we were getting set up. So I will have to go back. I forgot I was in front of my PC instead of my Mac, which I normally am.
Gotcha.
So I just wanted to do a couple quick announcements before we move on to... Siri's trying to talk to me. Before we move on to our reviews portion of this, sure. Our review segment, I just wanted to shout out the clips of the week. They're up, and you should definitely check them out. That's our friend DJ Regular, and if you check them out, they're on the SavingThrowShow.com, and then just look for the clips of the week. Some great clips from New Pantheon, as well as the Broken Pack this week. Things are looking good. Also, make sure you swing over there, over to the site, and check out the Patreon. There are some changes coming, but you definitely want to be informed of these changes that are happening. They are going to be checking out up. You'll want to check out patreon.com/SavingThrowShow.
Absolutely.
And keep up with the news, because the adventurers are gathering. You want to join the society soon, the Exploration Society. You want, yeah, exactly. Oh, it perfect. Thank you for tossing that in the chat. If you look at the Patreon, join the Exploration Society. So members are going to get sweet pins, swags. We're writing some one-page adventures. There's a lot of really great things coming. So make sure and join up. It's totally sweet.
It's exciting.
I've seen some stuff in the background that I can't yet talk about. I don't have permission yet. But when I do have permission, you'll hear about it here.
Perfect. Good.
All right. The Tales from the City, kind of tapping into that love of. I talk about my love of cartoons, my love of playing weird characters, mm-hmm. and DJ Regular, we'll shout you out again.
Oh yeah. Repeatedly.
The clips of the week are awesome. So the Land of Eem is a fantasy RPG. It feels very cartoony. It feels a lot like Adventure Time to me. I dare say it was probably a little bit inspired here or there. and not like it's great.
Right.
So anyway, I've prattled on a little bit. Why don't you kick this review off?
Cool. I have been reading through this for a couple of weeks now. I'm a big fan of what's going on here in the land of Eme. This fantasy RPG, I'm going to say right at the start, this is a rule book that's in beta. So the materials you're about to see are all beta form. But even so, there's some awesome stuff in here. Land of Eme is written by and designed by the creators of the Rickety Stitch. And the Gelatinous Goo graphic novel series for kids. I love this. The art in here by Ben Costa and James Sparks is fantastic, or the writing, it's all just this really cool stuff with characters that I enjoy already just by seeing the pictures. They're dynamic, they got stuff going on. I just want to play this penguin at a masquerade. It's fantastic.
I like the weird goblin character with the mask. It looks like he's ready to get in a fight.
Yeah. This is going to be a battle of the bards.
Exactly.
This is great. Yeah. The big thing I wanted to start by talking about is actually the dice mechanic. That's kind of, as I look at a game system, excuse me, that's where I start. In this one, D12s, we're back. This is taking the best of a couple different worlds, I think, for role-playing games. I'll tell you right at the start that this is a game about, from what I've read, exploration. There's a lot of all of you kind of searching around for the next thing. Like, what's over there? Let's go find out. Exploration is a big part of this game, and that kind of adventurous spirit. And with that in mind, it makes sense that the mechanics of the game are based in not fully unqualified successes, right? We see this D12 plus skill. You'll see complete failure with a plus, woohoo, or success with a twist, yeah. Success and then complete success, of course. It's kind of our critical there. And I love this. I don't play with these very often, but even playing D&D, which has a yes or no, I always want this. You know, if someone just hits the DC barely, I don't put a twist on it, but I describe it that way. You know, you just barely scrape your way in. If someone just fails, you always want to be like, oh, you know, you were so close. The system lets you succeed or fail with those things in mind.
Yeah, I would love to see more systems kind of work that way. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of that in Pathfinder too, but I do like the... I like that this one, it's failure with a plus. That's the specific one that I really enjoy. Success with a twist is great too, but I like the idea of failure with a plus. If you look at the example, like for picking a locked door, you fail to pick the locked door, but you notice another more dangerous way inside, right? That's the kind of stuff I love when it comes to games.
It's so good. Right, tricking some guards. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
It's not just a yes and, it's also a no but system.
Right. And I feel like that is so helpful. And as a GM, it's very difficult to do, I think, to pull off effectively, because I don't know what is going to be the no but. What's the but? I didn't plan for one, right? You know, if I'm writing and scripting a really linear adventure, I need you to get through that door to get to the room where the battle's happening. If you can't pick the door, then what? You know, then what? So. Right. I like the scramble of this. I like the improvisation, and that feels like a big part of this game is kind of just diving into those. Let's move the story forward, but let's mm-hmm. focus on how can I make it more interesting, which is really fun.
Yeah, anything that moves the story forward, like even failures, in D&D, I don't always want them to be just the dead end.
Yeah.
Sometimes they have to be a little bit like, you know, you failed unlocking that door. You have to find another way. Right. But I love the idea of like, oh, you attempted to jump a pit. Ah, you were so close. You didn't quite make it.
Right.
Why don't you roll a saving throw to see if you can grab the edge? Or, you know, one of your companions can roll a dexterity check to see if they can catch you in time, that type of thing.
Yeah.
I like those kinds of features where just because the die failed doesn't necessarily mean the hero failed, because they're heroes. They're out there, you know, just all the time being these adventures. They're professionals, right? And this is right. And you'll hear me talk about this also, is I hate critical failures. I don't think they should exist. Rolling a one is meaningless in my games. It's just a one. And And so I just anything that prevents that, like, oh, done. No, you failed. That's it. Save versus death. You're done. Isn't my play style.
Right. I am just, of course, checking our time. We got to push through our review. We got guests waiting for us.
Oh man. All right.
Just taking another look at this, right? This next page, I just want to focus on real quick because this is good stuff. I've never seen a page like this in an RPG. I don't think ever. Mm-hmm. What is your job while playing the game? That's not usually how I think about it, but I love this focus on if you were playing the game, what should you be doing? You know, not just rolling the dice so that you can do your extra attack once you hit fifth level or something, but very specifically like role play, explore, be cooperative. I love those big bold call outs about what you should do as a player. And similarly on the GM side, give interesting and difficult choices. Like,
yeah.
Games are more exciting if you can do that. So go for it. This book is so good. To take a couple of minutes, the game only has 6 classes, but they're all pretty unique, pretty exciting. The bards, loyal chums. The gnomes are natural magic users, very druid-like. We got a couple kinds of roguey characters.
Kind of the loyal chum. That's kind of my favorite one.
If you wanted Samwise as a class, there you are.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, Samwise is the hero
is
of
the
those
hero.
Movies.
Right? We've got rules here for a session zero that you should have filling out your relationships with other characters, because you should have one. Your personal quest, your backstory. I love this stuff. Ideals and flaws.
I do like they also point out the TTRPG safety toolkit as something to consider whenever you're doing this as well.
Yeah.
And the character sheet. Let's take a quick look at this character sheet.
Yeah, look at those 4 stats on the left side, if you can see them. There is Vim, Vigor, Knack, and Know-How. And at the start of the game, you have to give them modifiers. That's all. One of them gets a +2, one gets a +1, a +0, and a -1. Which means on that D12, you're one of your main stats, you're always going to be subtracting 1 from it. Of course, unless you have a skill that boosts that up. And I love that. That means for some characters, success, unqualified success, is not on the table, which I kind of like, honestly. You know, D&D, you make an Arcana check. I don't have Arcana, but I rolled a 20, so cool.
Cool. Yeah.
This just says you kind of can't do that.
Yeah.
There's so much. Level 10 ability for the bard. The bard's cool. The bard's great. Is narrative teleport, bard's tale. Once per session at the end of the scene, you can just transport yourself and the party to the next scene by just telling a story about how you got there. Like, and so we traveled across the scary forest through what is it from Elf? through the candy cane forest and then across the Brooklyn Tunnel, whatever. and then you're there, done, hand wave it. I love it. It's a very cool story with a lot of really interesting ideas. We're gonna have to dig into this, I think, a second time, which we have already discussed. Justin and I, we're chatting with these we want to chat with these designers and get them in here and talk about what makes this game really interesting and exciting.
So this is your preview for you to get excited.
Yeah,
but is now the time for guests?
I will say that you can go onto the website for the Land of Eem and you can get your copy of the beta rulebook to check out. It is, 180 pages, something like that. So there's lots of material for you to check out.
All right. And then before we swap on over, I just want to give a quick shout out to the followers who joined us while we were chatting. I did not catch them all. So you all are awesome. Let's see here. There's the Red Sage and Iculus 1030. Thank you so much for following. And with that, let's go to our first guest.
All right. All right. Welcome, Aki. How are you doing? Welcome to Storytime on Owlbear's
Hi, hi.
My goodness.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. We're now here surrounded by purple. This is like we're in scene time now.
Sweetheart.
Yeah. Let's see. I wanted you to be one of our very first guests because you are such a prolific streamer. You do so much, and I'm so excited about so many of your shows.
Is prolific the right word? That's not the word I was expecting.
Which word?
I don't know, but prolific. It's very, very kind of you to say. Thank you.
Of course, what we're going to talk a little bit about All Games No Masters, but I keep seeing you everywhere, right? Clear skies.
Yeah.
Or let's get. Can almost not say it out loud without laughing. Let's get Wild Amount.
Let's get Wild Amount is a lot of fun.
That's so amazing.
We call ourselves the Wild Ones. So, well, thank you. That's very kind of you to say. I do a little bit of stuff here and there. I've been very, very fortunate to get to work with a lot of really cool people in this space. Mm-hmm. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, that's good. Well, I wanted to talk to you kind of about, you know, not just learn a story that you've gone through, but, you know, as a streamer who tells many, many stories, how do you get started? How do you get, not get started in the genre, but, you know, you sit down to a table. What's your mindset like when you get ready for one of these games?
So I'm one of those people who... Sometimes I have two different phases. I have two different modes of like how I approach a game. I either come in knowing exactly who and what I want to play. And if somebody else has the same idea, then we kind of figure it out at the table and like kind of try and splice things so that we both get to have a little bit of both. Or I'm the type of person who waits until everybody else has figured out what they're going to do. And then I'm just like, okay, this is where I'm going to fit in.
I gotcha.
So like, I have two different modes depending. Sometimes I'm feeling really inspired and just being like, I know exactly what I want to do. And this is what I'm going to do. And then other times I'm just sort of like, I'm going to be over here. And I'm just going to like watch y'all figure out what you're going to do. So it can depend.
Yeah, and especially because your shows seem to run the gamut, right? You have the shows where your characters are all, you know, I expect built out with a team in advance. You've talked about them. You're ready to go. And then, of course, All Games, No Masters. I always want to say All Gods, No Masters or something, but All Games, No Masters, which is on the, like, right now, right?
Yeah, we...
it's just ready to go.
A little peek behind the curtain is that... in order to make sure that we are coming in as the best possible examples of what this game could be, because like All Games of Masters is at its core an educational show.
Yes.
Like we are teaching people how to play games that don't require game masters. And that means we ourselves have to do a certain level of learning before we get started. Right. So we do have a meeting together the day before where we kind of make sure everybody understands what's going on, like ourselves. That doesn't mean we don't feel comfortable asking questions during the actual game, because we do quite often. But it's more just like, is everybody feeling all right? Does anybody have any ideas? Sometimes we might pin down a couple of like character things like early, just to make sure that like when we get in on Wednesday night, we hit the ground running and it's just 2 hours of solid having fun and doing wild things.
Sure. Which makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's in a game that is, you know, all games, no masters, the GM-less wonder that it is. I'm used to playing a lot of Fiasco, so I come from a similar space. And without a GM, there is this need to at some point just make big choices. Like just the story, it's headed this way, and you know, no one is telling you must do this or you must do this, right? So even with those boundaries, I expect you've got a lot of freedom within a system like that.
Yeah, it can be really funny sometimes because every now and again, we'll kind of ask ourselves, like, as a group and be like, is it okay? Can I do that? And we'll just kind of turn to each other and go, like, there is nobody to tell you you can't. So it's like, there is no one here who's going to be like, nah, you can't do that, brah. Like, of course, we have, like, you know, we use the same safety tools and systems that are, like,
of course,
you know, that guide, hopefully, you know, all tables at this point. If you're not using safety tools at your table. But like for the most part, it's just sort of like we've tried to build this table on the idea that like we're not going to purposely do anything that's going to deeply upset or like fuck up things for other people. Yeah. I apologize if I'm not allowed to use that word, but you know,
it's a good time to use it.
And the interesting thing is that when I was putting this table together, like, I pulled this table together first because there was one of my players was somebody that I play with in a home game, but our characters in that game don't get along. So we as friends do not get to interact with each other at that table very much. And, you know, that bummed me out. It was like, I'm finally getting a chance to play with you, but I don't actually get to play with you. So how can I play with you more? And I was like, well, I have this idea for this thing. Do you want to come do this thing with me? and that's kind of how the show became what it is.
That is so perfect. I'm curious, do you decide which games you're going to be running in each session? Is it your master plan?
So what we did is we each had the opportunity to pick a game that we absolutely had to, like we personally were just really, really invested in the idea of playing. Mm-hmm. And then we also chose an alternate in the event that we would have some time towards the end of the season to like pull in another system and play. We kind of try to keep the games between 1 to 2 sessions for each of them. Some of them play shorter than others. Like that's kind of the nature of GMless systems. Some can become campaigns. Some are kind of only meant to be played as 1 or 2 shots. And so we kind of like took the games that we had chosen and we're like, which of these games feel like games that are going to take a little bit longer than others. And then sort of broke it down that way. Like now that we are imminently going to be beginning our second season, though I cannot say exactly when that's happening. We are in the process of choosing our next batch of games right now.
Favorites might be tough, but what's one of those systems that you played last season that you really enjoyed that you'd love to like share with others?
Oh man, we had so much fun playing They Came to Play Ball. Like we did only one shot of that. And we finished that game, each and every one of us being like, we cannot wait to play that again. Like that was just so much fun. It was just like this really, like, it was just a very pristine system. And we actually had the great fortune of in our meeting the day before of actually having the creator in our meeting with us to kind of, you know, break down the system for us a little bit. And like, it was really cool. She was so excited that we were playing the game. We were so excited that we were playing the game. And when we finished the game, we're like, man, we're excited to play more of that at some point. And then Amazing. We also had an absolute blast with Dialect. Like, everybody who plays in my group are like, you know, writers or people who love to read or like, you know, actors. Like we've kind of built our entire we're all very much, we love words and we love language.
Yeah.
One of my other players, Randy, he and I both lived in Japan together at the same time. It's how we know each other. We both have a deep love of language. We're both actors. So that was a really phenomenal game as well.
That's good. Well, I'm excited to see which games you pick for next time as well. I know that, of course, you do have to get going soon because you are on New Pantheon in an hour from now. Yeah, everybody.
I'm going to help you build an encounter. I'm not going to run away before we've had the chance to do that. I will be here for that.
Fair enough. But I want to make sure we get a story moment from you, right? It's story time. Okay. Is there a moment in one of your games that you feel that you just remember really well that was like a cool bit that you would love to tell us about?
Man, so many games, so many cool stories.
Yeah, it's what prolific.
So I actually very recently had the opportunity to play Alice is Missing with the people over at Good Time Society. And we're talking like a ridiculous cast. It was B. Dave Walters, Mark Meer, Gina DeVivo, and myself, which is just like, along with the actual creator of the game, Spencer Stark, who is also just a delightful human being. And it's my first time playing, never played Alice is Missing before. It's a phenomenal game. I've heard so many good things about it. And I just remember this energy through that entire game that just, there's something about the intensity of the play and the way that like, it really taps it, especially as a millennial who grew up who started with TextRP, like really like started with that TextRP to kind of dive back into that sort of mode of communication. And even being able to see everybody's face, like the complete silence and like only being able to like see the facial reactions as we're all like scrambling to solve this mystery together. Mm-hmm. And like just some really, really beautiful story moments. I remember there was this like sort of intense moment that really took all of the table together, kind of agreeing, like without saying anything to each other, to sort of like really take care of each other in a way that like could have been incredibly like fragile and emotional and like off-putting. But everybody just kind of gelled around that moment so nicely. And yeah, I don't think I've never had an experience like that at a table before. It was kind of magical.
I can't imagine. This game looks incredible. I backed it and got my copy and started reading through it, and immediately was like, I've got to play this with, you know, this group of people that I trust completely, you know, and have this experience. Right, you're mostly communicating over your phones. You're just texting back and forth, right? And I know that the game comes with cards and clues and things like that as well. But did you have the opportunity then to just start? I mean, you can kind of decide how it's going to go, right? Kind of inject some of your story into, or your theory, maybe.
Yeah. That's actually kind of what happened with this moment. It's that I drew a card and like had to figure out how to justify that card and how I kind of played that into the story. Uh-huh. And it meant kind of leaping off a cliff. And for a little bit of context, and I do kind of want to put a bit of a content warning up here that this is slightly sensitive. And so if it does deal with like screwed up power dynamics and all that stuff. So if that kind of thing is like squeaky for you, I'm just going to warn you right now that it is slightly sensitive. But my student, the character I was playing, was engaging in this case, just a text-based relationship with a teacher. And the revelation of that was something that had to be handled super delicately because, you know, of the content, but also was something that like was not something I'd ever anticipated being part of the story, but because of the card I drew, I had to be like, okay, how do I justify this? How do I make this make sense within the realm of the story that we've already recreated? Mm-hmm. And one of the other characters had talked about how Alice had punched this teacher out over something. It was a rumor that had been going around. And so I decided that the reason that she did that was not because of something that happened between her and that teacher. It would be because of something that happened between me and that teacher. That was a moment that like was very delicate to navigate in the game.
Yeah.
Like I said, incredible to watch everybody kind of go, okay, we got it. All right, here's how we're going to play this, kind of without ever like missing a beat. It was pretty incredible.
That's amazing. That really, really is. Wow. Incredible. I mean, just having that team where you can have that kind of, you know, that story. Wow. that is amazing. And, you know, for me, a little intimidating. I'm very impressed.
Like I said, it was one of those things where I was just sort of like, okay, I think I know how I need to do this. Mm-hmm. I have to be very careful. It's a game that, and it's a game that challenges you in that way. It's just sort of like, it deals with really difficult subject matter and requires like a really heightened level of sensitivity to that material. And like, you have to be comfortable with a certain level of vulnerability. And in this case, like I'd never had the opportunity to play with Mark before. Like this was my first time even meeting him. So like, I think it speaks to the consummate professionalism of the table. Like everybody was just, I mean, I'd give my left arm to play with them all again. It was just a really, really great table.
Amazing. That's fantastic. Wow. Well, that's amazing. I thank you for sharing that. Absolutely. Let's say I wanted to find one of your many, many shows that you're doing right now. How many are you doing at the moment? Like, you know, ish at the moment.
I'm doing seven shows, two of them are on hiatus at the moment.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. But they'll be back. That's amazing. Yeah. Well, I hope that you get to have more amazing moments. I'm excited to see some of these stories for myself for sure. And I'm excited to see what comes up next on New Pantheon, actually.
I'm excited too.
As well.
I have no idea what torment Steven has prepared for us poor teenagers for this next episode.
Right. Well, at least you have your deific powers to back you up, right?
Yes.
Right?
I am empowered by truth, justice, and harmony, and therefore I'm all good. Maat's got my back.
Oh my gosh. Well, if your character ever wants to hang out with a champion of art and beauty, you just let me know.
Ooh, yeah, I feel like that would be a good combo.
My paladin of art is fun to play.
Yeah, I was listening to your Pathfinder conversation, and man, yeah. I miss playing 2E. It was a lot of fun.
Right. Yeah. I am with you. Well, thank you so much. We'll get back to you. You're going to be back in a little bit as you start building an adventure together. But we're going to swap back over pretty quickly and let Justin and Teos have a chance to chat.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Well, that was Aki and Rich, and I'm back. I did have to run and hit the head while it was not my turn, and so I'm a little out of breath. But I wanted to go ahead and introduce our next guest. This is Teos, also known as Alpha Stream, and I've known Teos for too long now.
I knew you were going to say too long. I knew that was coming.
Yeah, over 10 years. He has been on every iteration of podcast and show I have done. We met through the Living Forgotten Realms campaign. So that was an organized campaign for 4th edition in the Forgotten Realms. It's a ton of fun. We have a great crew here in the Portland area who really enjoyed it. Since then, we've also participated in the Dark Sun Ages, blah, 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 blah,
Ages Ashes of Athos.
Ashes of Athos. Why is my brain?
That's awesome.
Athos is quickly became one of my favorite settings after talking with Teos and his passion about it. And then we all made the journey to D&D Next 5th edition together. What was the last game we played was
Tomb of Annihilation.
Oh yeah, right? Tomb of Annihilation. That was a ton of fun.
And some playtests.
Yeah. Oh man, so much. And Teos, he has this amazing collection of Dungeon Forge tiles and all this great terrain stuff. But the thing that I always enjoy whenever he talks about on Twitter is miniatures. Teos is on a podcast called Misdirected
Mastering Dungeons on the Misdirected Mark Network.
I don't know if that's a repeating segment there yet, but on his site alphastream.com you can go and see all his reviews on minis and a lot of great comparisons between the old Wizards of the Coast minis and the new WizKids minis, and that's specifically what I brought you on to talk about. So welcome to the show. It's nice seeing you. I'm hoping we all get our shot soon and we can game at a real table soon. But
yeah, absolutely. I can't wait for that. Thanks for having me on, Justin and Rich. Really appreciate it. I've enjoyed the show so far. Good to see you on the Saving Throw Network. Good network.
Yeah. All right. So I guess minis, right? WizKids took over doing the D&D minis for 5th edition. They had previously been doing them for Paizo. And because they've just been a mini producing game, like I used to play HeroClix and those other games, like they have the ability to produce minis more inexpensively than Wizards of the Coast probably ever could. So they've kind of taken it over, and they've created some spectacular minis, and they've created some stinkers. let's get into it. So
can I get into it?
Yeah. So. I want to show two types of minis. I have some minis over here. Mm-hmm. And this is important because these two minis are my generic minis. Every DM has them. These are the generic minis that you put down on your D&D table or Pathfinder table. They represent the bad guys. And I always use my stormtroopers and people.
Tusken Raiders, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and having played in your campaigns, I've seen those hit the table countless times. I think Mike Shea has a crossbow dude. You know, there's all kinds of things like that. I swear to not do that. So even though I do have some favorites, I mean, who doesn't love a good pig farmer, right? Like,
oh yeah,
his little pig that he's carrying under his arm. I mean, that's an old standby, but I always try to shake it up. And so I have this elaborate system, which I've documented on my blog, by which I make sure that I can get to the mini that I want for the session with as little prep as possible, and then put them back with as little work as possible, because I love those minis, right? I love to just, I mean, you know, you've got some just amazing, amazing minis.
Oh yeah.
That are just like, that's Zariel from the Avernus set, which is an incredible one. And just that diversity that they've given us of minis across the ages is just, you know, it's a gift, right? Like Bahir from the old DDM set. I mean, just unbelievable. I live for those kinds of miniatures. It excites me. And so I always like picking, you know, the exact mini when I can, or something that at least excites people when it hits the table.
Yeah. I don't just get the D&D minis. Occasionally I pick up the Paizo ones, because I do think some of their sculpts are a lot better. Like, for instance, I have the Carrion Crawler here from Paizo. I think that's one of the best Carrion Crawler minis out there.
Yeah, there's some really good Pathfinder ones that I've picked up over the years. Or even like, you know, old Star Wars minis. Like, I don't know how easy it is to, yeah. Right. So the Acklay is just fantastic with the pose it has. You know, it really scares people when you throw a different mini like that down that they've never even seen before, or they might recognize it from Star Wars, but it really shocks them and wakes them up. McFarlane has the various dragons. This is great for Dark Sun, looks like the Dragon of Tyr, but just super evocative, right? So you can always pick up some weird, more, you know, atypical minis to shake it up.
Yeah. So do you have any minis of like the old DDM or the old Dungeons and Dragons ones versus a WizKids that particularly stand out to you?
So I have two that I always kind of go to, because in general, like, the DDM minis were hefty, which is maybe why they couldn't turn much of a profit on it. But when you see the WizKids ones, they tend to be leaner on plastic. And sometimes that's really disappointing. So this is the Balor Demon, which this is the old DDM, from the D&D company itself. Just incredible, right? Like, just the thickness of the whip, of the body. I mean, this is just, it's hefty. And then you have the same, this is the new version. And it's not bad. I mean, it's cool, but it just, one of them really scares you when you plunk it on the table, and the other one's just kind of neat. Right.
Yeah.
And possibly the worst example of this, partly because it's a miniature that I love so much, is the Yuan-Ti Anathema from the old set. Is this swirling mass of snakes that curl into this head and these arms. And then there's this new sad version that is a sloppy paint job and this super thin arms. And I don't know what it's doing. Like, and it's the same base.
Yeah.
and one of them was cheaper to make. Guess which one? and I want them to be profitable, but it's sort of like what's happening. And you talked about Tiamat, right? And here's the old DDM aspect of Tiamat. And this was an aspect. And this was a kind of neat thing they do, which is, hey, it's just Tiamat sending her projection into your world. So that's why it looks a little, you know, smaller. And then they, you know, WizKid said, well, this is Tiamat. And we're all like, no, it's not. No. It's cool. It looks pretty. But, you know, I still feel like I'm in the D&D cartoon. And I guess they heard us, because they're like, well, how about if I give you one so big you possibly can't use it? and I'm a little bit like, you know, not only is it $400, sorry,
$399.
But, I mean, it's so big that you're just like, I can't store all the dragons you're giving me. And selling me and all the terrain and just the castles. And so, you know, I wonder if we've gotten to that point where they've suddenly said, well, you know, we will give you the heftiness, but it's going to be an incredible price and you won't be able to own all of them, right? It's just, you can't even store them or place them on some shelf because it'll just fill everything up.
Yeah. I do have to say, like, some of the minis that they've done, and I didn't grab it. I was talking about it earlier, but I like for oh, that one's so good, right? you know, in for instance, like the troll. I love the WizKids mm-hmm. troll mini. I like that it's wiry, that it's thin, that it's kind of creepy versus the old Dungeons and Dragons one, which was also a really cool mini. It was definitely bulkier, but it didn't feel like the kind of troll that I remember.
Sure. Yeah, it's a more classic look now, right?
Yeah.
Another really beautiful example of that is the different versions we've seen of the Purple Worm. So this is the old DDM Purple Worm, which is really fantastic, right? Lovely sculpt. And this is something that DDMs always did. Just a heftiness to it. It feels strong, beautiful, really cool, just awe-inspiring. And then WizKids created this one for one of their prepackaged sets. And it's okay.
Yeah, it's okay.
You know? And then they said, all right, well, we'll charge you money for it at a premium price. And now we have the new version is super awesome.
Right.
I mean, it's superb, but you've got to shell out that cash to get the really nice version. And I did, obviously. I couldn't say no to it because it's just too cool.
Does it pass the mini test?
Yeah. I mean, it is. Yes, you can. You know, the test is always, can you put, you know, a miniature inside of the maw? Which is very important to always be able to do. Because as Justin knows from being in my campaigns, I delight in swallowing characters. You know, it's unapologetically, I can't wait to swallow something or at least grapple it with the jaw. And so that's just really cool. I love that.
Yeah. You mentioned the premium miniatures. I love the premium miniatures from WizKids. I think they do an amazing job. I think they're better than the DDM kind of special ones, right? Yeah. Like, sure, Icing Death was fine. Like, I liked Icing Death. It was a favorite of my dragons. The giant red dragon is gorgeous. It's a collector's item, right? But for the most part, it's like, you know, you didn't get many Krakens, right? I mean, this is my like favorite big mini from WizKids. It's just, you know, so much detail, and the waves are amazing. And and honestly, I love that they're going to the clear bases. I think that's smart. Yeah. I like those a lot.
Yeah, I like that. Or how they did the gelatinous cube where they have the removable insert, right? And so you can put your miniature inside of it.
We both grabbed it.
Yeah,
I went ahead and I painted mine. So like,
oh, nice.
I painted skeletons in there and everything.
And the old one actually did that too. A lot of people didn't know the old one opens up as well. But but it's nice how they added that extra layer around the plastic so you can do that.
Yes.
Yeah, super cool. I mean, the goblin, I think it's called Goblin Hucker. Yeah, this is from Tyranny of Dragons. So actually has little goblins that the ogre flings at you.
Mm-hmm.
That is a just amazing piece of work there.
And I mean, speaking of the ogre, I just straight up, I like this ogre so much better.
Great ogre.
Right? It's so much better than the old ogres.
This is from the Theros, the Polukranos World Eater, but it's a Hydra for most of us. Just fantastic sculpt. So there have been some really, really beautiful minis. That I love going to. The flail snail was in a recent set.
That's right, the flail snail.
And
so good.
It has this goo, like it's the slime coming off of it at the bottom, and the scintillating shell. I mean, really some great work. So, there are times when I really feel let down by their minis, but there are other times that are great. Like they had this Ravnica collector's set. The detail on some of these. And the different color plastics, like it used to be that they could only do so much with a mini, and now they do a lot more. So it's a mix, right? Sometimes you're let down by a mini and you think, come on, they could have just looked at the old one and given me that. But other times there's an improvement and an evolution. Like there's this, Avernus had this, what's it called? The Narzagon and Nightmare set. And so that's pretty neat already. It's like flaming, but oh wait, there's more. You can take it all apart and you can put it back into being a horse, which is totally absurd. So this piece goes in somehow and it becomes the horse.
Oh, nice.
And then the person reassembles into the mounted version.
Oh, wow.
So you have this complete ability with this one mini to kind of ride it or not. And I don't know who thought that up. I'm not sure we super needed it, but it's amazing and awesome. And in your encounter, you're going to have to think how you let them dismount it and attack separately. But
Yeah,
beautiful options.
And that's something like, that's always, and I didn't realize that they made that one, but that's always the mini I'm looking for, right? I like playing mounted characters on occasion, and I want to be able to put my mini on the mount. And I know there's some of them you can get, like where you can put the mini down, but the mount looks weird or all that. But that's such a graceful solution.
Yeah, that little piece that plugs in is what really makes the difference and just evens it out.
That's so good.
I also have to talk about some of the other companies, like Dwarven Forge makes some miniatures. So this is from their Caverns Deep series. This, I forget, it's some sort of forest spirit, but it is just, the details on this creature are something else. Right? And so you can, bring in their terrain. You have things like their trees that you drop down and just, what a story you can build off of pieces like that, right? Unbelievable.
Yeah, speaking of other companies, I like digging into a lot of other companies too. So like this troll, which is going to show up weird because of my green screen, but this troll is from Warhammer Fantasy, and I just, I just painted it, right?
Is that spitting acid? That's great.
It's throwing up, and it has like fish bones and stuff in it.
This is a cool lich, Thane Lich.
Nice.
Fire behind.
And when they didn't have very good Warforged, I picked up one of these guys from Warhammer 40K.
Oh, nice.
I painted that to be a Warforged, yeah. Oh, nice.
This pirate, I thought of you because pirates is one of my favorites. Like, it just looks so great. That's in the Paizo line. And he's showing off like just the fancy. He has like the best butt out of most minis. And then this is just right out of Game of Thrones. Just such a good look in the Paizo line.
Oh, man. So good.
You see this shadow? You can put a miniature on it.
Oh wow!
Like, there's some really neat things. So yeah, it's Oh, and one of my favorites of all time is the Collar in Darkness.
Oh yeah, that
put a little
so
base
good.
On it, which is a fun thing you can do. But it's like just this mass of spirits that are, just protesting their being in this world, and that's the kind of thing you drop this down and players have no idea what that creature does, but they know it's not going to be okay.
Yeah, I remember that being one of my favorite minis from the D&D series of minis was that weird spirity thing. All right, well, we're getting ready to go and build an adventure. But before we do that, let's talk about a little bit where we can find your stuff on the internet.
Awesome. You can find me at alphastream.org. If you go to misdirectedmark.com, you can find our podcast, Mastering Dungeons, where we rip off whatever you've talked about on the previous show and we repackage it. No, I'm kidding. We do our own things, but sometimes there's some similarities. Yeah. And I may have taken some ideas from your character build discussions, but I've got something really cool coming up. I'm going to be launching a Kickstarter with my son. Because my teenage son and I wrote an adventure together. It was super fun. And so I'm finding art and I just got some maps in. I know, right? And we're so excited because we're seeing art come in. And I now really appreciate all the people who have launched a Kickstarter because, geez, why do we do this again? Because, wow, that's hard. And so procuring art, boy, there's a thing I didn't want to do as a pastime. But when you see great art come in, like I'm looking at these maps of this clock tower and, oh, yeah. So that's exciting. I'm getting ready for that. And then I've got a couple of secret projects that are going on. So I'm excited for this year. This is going to be a good year.
And what? So what about their secret projects?
Yeah, they're the...
Yeah. Oh, we're having audio trouble. Sorry. All right. And with that, let's go ahead and hop on over and we'll start trying to see what kind of adventure we can do. All right. We all should be live now. We're checking this out. And of course, I don't have my Notion up, but I will fix that here in just a second.
Wow.
I know.
Wow. Right?
So what we do, this is kind of our thing, is the last portion of our show, of Owlbear Soup, is with the help of the audience, with the help of our guests, we are going to build like a short one-shot style adventure, or we'll stick with an adventure this week.
Yeah.
So let's kind of start this out. I'm a big D&D nerd. I think D&D is a great idea for setting an adventure, starting an adventure. However, what do you guys think? Let's think about setting. Are we thinking fantasy? Do we want to do cyberpunk? Do we want to do space? Do we want to do anthropomorphic city filled with animals. What do you guys think?
Wow. Wow, folks.
So many options.
It's true.
Starting is the hardest part.
Yeah. I know. And I feel like, you know, honestly, after listening to both of these bits, I feel like Aki may have this breadth of themes ready to go. And Teos is, of course, looking at a bunch of villains. I feel like there's a combo here.
Yeah, I like the idea of doing something that is based on like an all villains or all like. A little bit like, you know, what's the Disney show called? Descendants, where it's like all the kids of Disney villains.
Ooh.
But like, ooh. basically like the offspring of like major villains, like, you know, what if Tiamat had a kid or, you know, Vecna had a child, like just this ragtag group of kids of like the most prolific villains. It's like Strahd before he became like this undead vampire, you mm-hmm. know, like had a couple of kids and like his great, great, great grandchild is suddenly just like, oh, fucking Strahd now. Like, you know, it's like kind of that deal. It's like because I do actually do quite a bit of like, you know, children of, like, I've done a couple of shows that are like that. And it's actually a lot of fun to play with that stuff. Just sort of like mm-hmm. the expectations of the people you've descended from, and then you as an actual person.
Sons of villainry.
This is perfect. So let's see here. So here's the request that we have gotten from the chat as well is steampunk animals. So we're going to be doing, they're all the children of villains. Children of villains
with steampunk animals
in a steampunk animal type of setting. A flail was requested that we bring it in some way.
Wow, let me pull all right,
notes real quick.
If they like steampunk animals, they're gonna love the adventure that my son and I wrote.
Ooh.
Oh, good.
Are these animals like their familiars, or are they like, Are they the actual heroes of this world that the villains inhabit?
Well, right.
Play a steampunk animal.
Yeah. So here's my idea real quick. So we do have the Adventuring Society. Or Society of Adventures, sorry, or one of those, my brain.
The Exploration Society, yeah.
Exploration Society, thank you. So we do have the Exploration Society as a starting place, right? We could start there. That works for everyone here. And we are the Owlbear Soup. So let's have Chef Owlbear D send folks on the... this will be our quest giver.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe around the Exploration Society hub, we have some anthropomorphic...
Yeah,
close enough.
That's why we like
folks. Yeah, I don't know. This is why you guys let me type, because I can't spell. So we have anthropomorphic folks, and they are adventurers. So Chef Owlbear D, what does Chef Owlbear D want our adventurers to go do? So they're going to go to a steampunk world. They need to go to a steampunk world.
Right.
Through the portal on the
This is exciting
floor.
so we have our heroes, these anthropomorphic descendants of villains. So mm-hmm. so Strahd, but a fox, but also and then going through a portal to steampunk town. Okay.
Yeah. Maybe none of them realize that they've been turned into animals.
Oh yeah, maybe the portal turns them into animals.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe they don't start off that way, but when they go to this portal, they become whatever it is the world demands of them to be. It's like,
oh, I love this.
Yeah.
Because immediately your character
is pissed off. Is like, whack.
Yeah.
Right. But also now has like a climb speed.
What if they're instead like a lizard, like a Komodo dragon instead? And they're just like.
That's amazing.
Tiamat as a kimono dragon.
Oh, I love the idea of having an adventure where people get cool powers that they'll only have maybe for this one adventure, but it just changes their play style a little bit. Yeah. So that sounds fantastic. We'd have a whole table set up, you know, it could be roll a D12 and now you are, or of course, inspired by, you know, lizard folk for Tiamat or something, you know, could be all over the place. Okay, so we brought them to Steampunk Town. What are they here for? Why did they come through the portal?
Why'd they go there?
Why?
What's the mission? They have to retrieve highly valuable and sought after spice or cooking ingredient that's also difficult to obtain.
Someone's speaking our language.
Yep. The chef wants you. Let's do a spice. The chef wants you. You to get a spice from Steampunk Town.
Mm-hmm. So maybe what if that's the surprise? Like you go through the portal. Uh-huh. Well, there's two surprises. One is that you're going to become, you know, steampunk. An and then the other part is that that you stumble upon this plot that is about to be sprung by all these villains.
Mm. Oh.
So maybe you just think you're going for spices, but there's so much more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you go in for spices, but then the aspects of your villain parents, parents in this town are plotting something.
Oh, okay. This is good because it doesn't need to be spice related, but we immediately realize that those are our our ancestors. I've got a tentacle now. Sorry.
Hi,
Oh, I've got an idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. What if the spice is actually what's powering the steampunkness?
Oh.
So you can only get it by resolving the problem.
Ooh.
Oh. Oh. Yeah. So the steampunkness is actually part of the problem.
Because there's always that table that would say like, "Yeah, sorry about your steampunk problem. We got the spice. See you later."
Right.
And what if the people? What if the people that use what if the people who run the city and use the spice to help keep things running are actually plotting with the villains? This is like the whole big conspiracy or corruption plot.
Yes.
We already got the spice must flow. I like it.
All right.
Oh, wow.
So our first scene. We got a lot of stuff going on here. So let's see. So scene one, they meet Chef Alberti.
Who's down in the corner, by the way. Is it that corner?
Who runs Spice Town? They meet with Chef Alberti in the kitchen. He sends them to the portal.
Uh-huh.
And then scene two, right? Scene one is the introduction. We're meeting our patron. Patrons are kind of a nice tool to use whenever you're writing one shots. This is the person who the adventurer Cinder Honor, also like a Johnson in steampunk, and that type of stuff.
I'm so sorry. I'm just realizing that this is basically like Suicide Squad goes shopping.
I mean, it is.
Oh, that's perfect.
Goes grocery shopping. Suicide Squad goes grocery shopping. That's what this is.
Yep.
I can't spell Suicide Squad. Okay, so scene two. They arrive in Steampunk Town.
Okay.
So now you get to figure out what kind you are, what creature.
Yeah. So we want to know what kinds of creatures are the characters? Creatures.
Just so as you know, I'm looking at the stream and the notes that you're making are not showing up because you think you got to scroll down.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Time to scroll.
Time to scroll. Got to remember those things.
Oh, my gosh. And I'm seeing a good note in the chat, too, that I'm holding on to for a second. So.
Oh, okay. All right. All right.
What kinds of creatures are the PCs?
Yeah. So, and then, you know, we have things like fox, turtle.
Turtle.
I love turtles.
The turtle, yeah, right? The turtle walks in and is like, I'm still just a turtle? Is that what happened?
The tabaxi also goes through the same issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, cat is always a good one.
Like the kitsune tries to change their form, but they just change to the same form.
They just become a fox again with fewer tails.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
A kitsune becomes an actual fox with fewer tails. Oh, no.
Oh my
gosh. The kobold at this point has the best chance of becoming an actual dragon when they come out on the other side. Yeah.
Oh, perfect. Just a tiny little dragon, a foot tall.
We all know the chupacabra animal in our backyard.
Yeah, there was a mention in the chat of...
I mean, goat is not a bad one, speaking of cabra.
No, not at all. about a sheepdog or German shepherd as the investigator. Like, as they get here, they're going to need someone. They're going to need a contact that's like, welcome to Steampunk Town. Are you looking for something? Can I help you? Yeah. Or maybe they are the link to the plot, of course. But I like that they have to meet a contact pretty quick.
Yeah, no, I like that. Like, they stumble upon a dog in a trench coat.
Mm-hmm. Usual.
Who is investigating?
Fedora.
Right.
To have a fedora.
Yep.
Yeah. Right.
Who's investigating something?
McGruff.
And fedora. A growth?
McGruff.
Oh, yeah. I thought he said he was investigating a growth.
Who isn't?
Every female.
The older we get, I mean, it's just.
Yeah, so we'll start with this. So this will be our next step giver, right? Because we're in this strange world, and so McGruff, we'll call him McGruff. Ooh. For now.
Mm-hmm. We also have this cool opportunity here, right? Strange things have happened. Our characters have just changed dramatically. Do we want to just give them the next step, or is it time for like action immediately? Just new world. I don't know what's happening. Now it's chaos.
I feel as though they have the opportunity when they first go through that portal to ruffle a few feathers. Perhaps they meet this contact because McGruff saves them from a potentially dire circumstance wherein they do not understand the world and therefore step in it like pretty quickly.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That sounds fun.
literal
feathers. Yeah.
A gang of chickens. So here we go. The players come through the portal and appear in the midst of a gang of chickens.
Oh gosh. I'm envisioning one of those scenes where you're outside like the big biker bar and someone like knocks over one motorcycle and they all fall down. It's like
a gang of chickens who are looking at them as the portal did something.
Mm-hmm.
What did the portal do to their something?
I'm imagining it something akin to Wizard of Oz, where the house lands on the good on the witch.
Oh, there's actually a through the portal, and the PCs realize that there is a bunch of chicken feathers in the air. There's a portal. Maybe exploded a chicken. Oh, whatever.
Broke their eggs, which were all in one basket.
Ooh.
That's a really good note from chat. I love it a lot.
They realize that they step through the portal. Who are mad at one of the PCs who stepped out of the portal and into a basket filled with eggs.
I love it.
I just love the idea of one of the chickens saying, I told you not to put them all in that one basket.
That's the entire box text for the scene.
Right, yeah.
Oh my gosh, that sounds great. Oh, this is a good start, like getting us in the scene. Definitely have to get saved by McGruff, whether, you know, the heroes defeat the chickens or not, right? McGruff coming in and being like, whoa, 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 come with me if you want to live. I got to tell you what's going on here, maybe.
You know, he has to call them kids no matter how old they are.
Oh yeah.
Kids.
Listen, son.
And yeah, these teenage, well, I was going to say teenage villains, but that's unfair to put on them, I think. Teenage descendants like of villains.
potential villains.
Great, you know, great.
They've got the seeds of greatness in them.
Yeah. Yes. But they're definitely not going to like being called kids by McGruff, definitely. So that's a good rivalry moment. I like it.
So how wise do we think McGruff is to like the fact that like something like is the obvious contact, like how knowledgeable do we want him to be about what's actually going on? Like, is he a really like well-informed contact, or is he somebody who's actually kind of a little bit more like discombobulated and maybe pretends to know more than he does? Like, what kind of, how reliable of a narrator is he?
That's perfect. I think a little bit of column A and a whole lot of column B, right? So so let's talk about McGruff for a second. All right, so McGruff is able to piece together rather quickly the PC's situation, but he often overlooks plainly obvious things, right? And that leads to strange happenings, strange misunderstandings.
What if like there's recently been a change? I mean, it depends on how direct we want to be, but there could have been recently a change in this area where there used to be a leader of the town and now it's all these kids. And right. Maybe they were in charge of the chickens.
Oh, yeah.
To watch the portal.
Right.
The kids. Maybe McGruff also knows that the spice is no longer, that all the spice has been bought up. I don't know. That could be the info he gives. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
McGruff.
I like that he's the intro to level one. Level two is villains, right? It's, maybe he doesn't put that together.
Right. Knows the spice the PCs are looking for. And knows that it is highly
controlled substance.
Highly controlled.
Oh, wow.
Though I'm sure there's pending legislation.
Right. Yeah.
Does Chef Alberti know all this stuff? I mean, that's a good question. He's just sent a bunch of kids out to this world.
How passionate is Chef Alberti about his craft is the actual question. And does he care?
In other adventures, when we've brought in Chef Alberti, he's been a little bit aloof, and he doesn't really seem to have all his faculties there, but he's able to impart a little bit of wisdom with the meal. So would he send these kids to someplace potentially dangerous without knowing it? Absolutely. Will he have some kind of kind-hearted, you did a good job, buddy, kind of quote at the end? 100%.
Probably.
So I like this idea in chat that does the spice turn everyone into animals? And maybe the chef just knows that it enhances like the animal flavor.
Ooh.
But it's not just the flavor, it actually enhances the animalness.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That could be.
I like it because then
that, like, you want to have a reason why is this spice connected or important or whatever.
The heroes can come back and impart an important lesson to Chef Alberti about spice consumption.
After school special.
Yeah.
Or you know.
I know everybody in the chat is thinking it, so I might as well say it. Yeah. Do you spice? Let's go ahead and get it out of the way.
It's not just the orange on orange eyeballs.
All right. So, well, let's, you know, and the next more important part is let's look at the, what is the final confrontation? Like, where are we leading to? There's some steps in the middle, but what is our goal?
So we only got a few minutes left.
I mean, yeah, it feels like there's like an either like a government building or a factory or something where all the spice is kind of being siloed, mm-hmm. that they have to get to and find, where then they discover that their parents were the ones who were fueling all of this ridiculousness.
Okay. I like the factory idea because that brings us into the steampunk a little more. And mm-hmm.
Okay. And it is a factory setting, right? So of course, I think the flail snail is specifically a part of the factory, right? They've got to bash this this spice down into powder so it goes down a conveyor and the flail smell, snail just... flail, you know, snails, maybe there's a bunch of them the in the... do the heroes need to free the flail snails? Are they accomplices? Do we fight them?
yeah. Well, I think in this final encounter, we will have the villains. We'll have... The mayor of the town. Yeah, we'll have the mayor of the town as the big bad, and the parents are underpowered here because of the magic. So, and the parents are the goons, and the PCs, they can convince flail snails to leave their station and help the PCs.
I just realized why it is that their parents might be interested in this spice. If we've established that the spice intensifies the animalness of somebody, perhaps they are trapped in this place and can't get out. And so in order to be able to reach their usual levels of power, they must consume this spice. And that's why they are also helping to kind of like hoard it.
Yeah.
And maybe they're concentrating its power in this factory or, yeah.
Oh my goodness. Right.
Let's see here. Do a little puking, little rainbow puke. And then, I think this is so good. The spice must flow. All right. So, yeah, that was a very quick outline of an adventure.
That I want to play.
I think that I want to play.
It's a great con game right here.
Exactly. Uh-huh. This could be... This may even end up being one of our one page adventures for the Patreon subscribers. Just remember, come take place and join in the chat with all this stuff. And you too could have your ideas misspelled by me on the screen.
I would never say it, Justin. Never.
It's an honor.
Aki, where can the folks find you coming soon?
You can find me over on Twitter at MixGinie in a Bottle. That's MixGinieInaBottle. And you can find my entire Twitch streaming schedule over on my personal Twitch stream, twitch.tv/ShidariAki. That's ShidareAki. And the next thing I'll be doing is New Pantheon right after this. In fact, I'm about to run away so that I can start getting ready for that.
That is perfect.
Yeah.
Enough. Wonderful. It was so great to have you.
You can find me at AlphaStream on the Twitters, and my blog is alphastream.org, and that's where you can join my mailing list and follow along when the Kickstarter launches.
Awesome.
I'm so excited.
We'll be looking forward to that. And Rich, do you have anything coming up this week that you want to shout out before we wrap this all up?
Oh, gosh, no, I'm in planning phases right now. But you can definitely follow along on Twitter at @rmalina, where I talk too much about... D&D stuff, and also my Academy of Adventures, where I run games for kids all week long.
Perfect.
How about you?
You can always check. Oh yeah, I was gonna say. And then you could always check me out on my personal Twitch channel, DJ Pirate Rabbits, and that's where I hop on the stream and DJ house music. So I'll see you all there, and everyone, stick around for New Pantheon.